Rule 5 results ahead, hot news ahead, question for the commissioners ahead, and league openings in some competitive dynasty leagues Ty and I play in. It's time for Dingers.
This is Dingers, way more than fantasy baseball. We keep it real when we talk and knock it straight out the park. Let's see the stats. What's the average draft position? What kind of plays you making? Check the wins above replacement. Check the lineups and the points. This I gotta see. What's your path to victory? Are they aiming for a dynasty? Get points going head to head. Please don't do me no favors. We're always watching waivers. Ain't no minor league. This is major. Yeah, Dingers. Let's go.
Welcome to Dingers, the only fantasy baseball podcast for smart people. It's not just Masataka Yoshida that wins you championships.
That's why
week in and week out, we're delivering tips and strategy to help you live that straight up OG lifestyle. Tyler Childs joined, as always, by Robbie Baseball from The Murder Room. What's happening, Robbie?
Impressive name pronunciation, and you will definitely be the one who gets to announce that during hot news. I'm good, Ty. For the first time in well over a month, I'll be recording without also having Ricola menthol lozenges. I am feeling still got whatever's going on in the throat, but I'm feeling so much better. The weather warmed up a little bit for us too. Snow's gone. I'm sure it's gone in London town too for you.
Yep. Yeah. We've gotten rid of the snow, which is good. The one thing I'll say is that I hate this time of year without snow because it's just wet and gross.
Yeah. I mean, I want it back next weekend. Like get a little closer to Christmas. Let's get a, like from whatever, December 18th, 20th, something like that on. I want snow. I want tobogganing between Christmas and New Year's, like white Christmas. That's what I grew up with. Sometimes in Northern Ontario, we'd come to Southern Ontario and it'd be green. And it was so depressing because you're just like, what's the point in living here when you don't get the four seasons? But then you talk to people who are like super South and they're like, snow, you know, we just put up more Christmas decorations on our lawn to make us pretend like it's snow. So
well,
we are lucky.
Because my little guy's old enough now that I can throw snowballs at him to the point that the neighbors judge how hard I'm throwing and be like, it's okay, guys. It's a changeup.
Yeah. And that'll tell you a lot about your neighbors based on their reaction to your changeup.
Right. Yeah.
But when I'm sure you're like to drink when you're doing that.
This is true. And, you know, they also like to judge in the neighborhood for that as well. But...
A long time ago, someone decided to put stuff in glass bottles. In some of these bottles, they put juice or milk, and that was stupid. Today, only alcohol and a few other products remain in the containers from the gods. It's time for beers and bourbon, because good advice only comes in a bottle.
I think I've finally mastered this screw off top. Just like pew, pew, pew.
Wow.
Done.
All right.
Got it. And wait. Crown float.
Nailed literally. It. Classic.
I'm shocked by like how into the crown float you are.
Yeah. I think it's just become a gag in my own head. That like, oh, I, you know, say to my wife, hey, can you pick up a couple, whatever it is I'm short on, ciders or Guinness. And I finally said to her this week, can you just level it off so that I have the same number? So I'm not asking for one. And then I have six of the other. So anyway, but yeah, I actually had a crown float last night.
And I know you were asking off the air what the name of this one was. And I couldn't remember outside of Cooper's, which is listed in giant bold lettering. Craft was the second word we were looking for, Robbie.
Yeah. You know how I figured it out? I figured it out because I went to the YouTube channel of ours that is super hard to find. If you go to YouTube and punch in Dingers podcast, two other not Dingers podcasts appear as like the predominant one. And one is one we've talked about. Like we've been rolling for years. We're 221 episodes in. We are tied with Jaron Duran's batting average for number of episodes. And it's this one that's about the Chicago Cubs. It's like just done from a fan, but he called it Dingers. but it's like a podcast about Chicago Cubs stuff. And we had already been rolling at this point in time, and I contacted him. It's like, hey man, like we're rolling with the same name, so it might mess up search results for both of us. And he's like, we're not called Dingers with an S, we're called Dinger. And I'm like, cool, man. So anyway, if you could like just lengthen it to the, like, cause he just put the word Dinger. So anyway, that's what comes up. But yeah, you can find us also on Twitter at Dingers Pod, or Ty at Turney Boss, or myself at Robbie Baseball One. And I am writing again regularly now, with the goal, Ty, of getting through all 30 MLB teams. I think I'm 13 through right now at RobbieBaseball.com.
The nice part is I know that you started Mariners and Royals for sure. Those two are done.
I finished Royals. No, I haven't done Mariners. That's like a Christmas Eve treat for me.
Or because it's like what, 20 pages?
it's actually like a master's thesis on being a general manager. But no, I think I'm 14 in. I finished the Royals today. I think Houston yesterday. And I'm just going alphabetically now. I started with the Jays, just kind of get them out of the way. But what I'm doing is taking unknown, let's say, lesser known fantasy baseball potential players, future guys. And I'm writing about them because we all know about the top tier guys and the mid tier guys. I'm writing about the rest, like the guys who have slipped through. And so far right now, it's a really solid mix of J2 and late 2021 draft class guys, simply because there's a lot of high school guys that signed last year for above slot. Kansas City, so weird. Two catchers, you'll have to go click on it to find out the two catchers who are both legitimate MLB fantasy guys. And I hate saying that about a catcher. And one guy, Ty, that I wrote about this catcher simply because of you. And I'm like, well, if he moves off the position, it's going to be gold. So... but that's not what we're talking about tonight.
Sorry.
Yeah. Catchers. Fantasy catchers. I get it. A little bit of housekeeping we got to do. We are in several leagues together. One of the ones that we are in is the listener league for the podcast. We know for sure we're going to need one more person to jump in. So if you're at all interested, and the fun thing is we don't actually know what our format's going to be yet, because whoever wins the year before picks the format for next year. So after this recording, but before the podcast itself airs, we will find out, contact, and know what our format will be for 2023. So if you're at all interested and you're a listener, hit us up at Dingers Pod through Twitter, and we will get you into that league. You just pay the Fantrax fee. It's like $5 or whatever. And then we just play to be better than everybody else. And mm-hmm. Two other league openings. One is the Dynasty League. That is an 8x8 league. It's a 24 teams, $100. The winner, I think, gets $1,200, $1,300, something like that. It's a decent payout. We restructured it. It was kind of an all or nothing league before, where you won, you got $2,200 when it was a 30 team league. Anyway, now you win north of 1,000 for sure. We do contracts, but no salaries. And then there's another league that I run that needs at least one, possibly two guys. There are some industry guys in this. There's some real sharks, some very good players. It is a contracts cap league, $50 points format. And this is, we've finished our fifth year. So a whole bunch of initial contracts have all expired for this offseason. So it's going to be an awesome auction. We have a restricted free agency, a 10-round prospect draft, all that stuff coming up this offseason. If you're interested in that, let me know. We had a list of guys, and I'm just getting that whole fantasy football no reply thing right now. So I'm looking for the guys who are willing and ready right now to pay. You'll actually be doing a dispersal draft. I can give you the details. Again, hit me up at Robbie Baseball One if you're interested in that. So I'm done that housekeeping.
Okay. So let's talk hot news. I mean, it's off season time. We had winter meetings this week. Things got rather interesting from the doling out billions of dollars perspective.
Crazy.
And we had some big time contracts, and we had a whole bunch of little ones in between. So we're going to get right into it. Notably, the first ever draft lottery took place at the winter meetings. I like this addition to Major League Baseball. It's kind of one of the anti-tanking rules that the players pushed for in the lockout. This is a good addition. It actually worked out that Pittsburgh won the auction draft. They weren't slated as the team expected based on the odds. So auction draft doing its thing. They're going to end up with back-to-back first picks, which is good for Pittsburgh because they suck and they need first picks.
No, they didn't have it this year, did they?
I thought they
wasn't. I thought Henry Davis was 2021.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking.
It was Baltimore. It should have been Washington. Yeah, it should have been Washington if they didn't do the thing. Which, like you said, I like this idea. What do you think of this?
I love it. I mean, I think it's a great addition. We see it like hockey is really probably the pioneer in this one. Like they've done the best work around this one, and it's been really good for
NBA.
Hockey. Yeah, NBA, but not to the same extent. Like NBA just hasn't had as much lopsidedness to the rigging of the draft, I guess, if you will.
Well, the cold envelope, right? The Patrick Ewing thing from the 80s.
Yeah, right. Like they've just been a lot smoother on the odds than hockey has. Hockey's had a lot more disruption based on the way their odds are distributed. I don't know if that's just pure luck, but it just appears to have had more impact on hockey. We've seen that immediately here on the baseball side. You're right. So Pittsburgh, first pick in two of the last 3 years, updated statement. I think the assumption is Dylan Cruz is going to be that guy. I think that's kind of the way too early guy. But you know, there's some reality to that, probably for Pittsburgh, who I would imagine given where they're at is going to take best player available because they already have a really good system.
I hope so.
So I think they're going to go that route, but we'll see. What do you, you like this one? Do you think, you like Dylan Cruz at this point too?
I think there's a lot left before the 1-1 pick goes out to see who it actually is. But I like it because a lot of fantasy leagues do this already, right? If you don't make the playoffs, you end up in a lottery or you play for that. So it kind of reflects what a lot of us fantasy GMs do. And even our Real Money Auction League that we're in with Roto Ronnie, who thanks to him again for coming on for a couple episodes. I didn't want to be speaking as much because of my voice. And I mean, we knew his information was going to be useless, but filler's filler, right? anyway, in one of those leagues that we're in, the Real Money Auction League that we talked about on the Strategery episode, we had a draft lottery for the top, or not top, but the 11 worst teams last year of the 30-team league. I was the 10th worst of the 11. You know what happened to me in the draft, Ty? My draft slot, I moved back one. So I do not like it for that league. but the team that was, I think, supposed to get 11th ended up getting the 5th overall pick. That was the biggest mover. Somebody jumped 6. So it's cool, right? It's just a fun thing. And it, like you said, you don't want teams to tank in fantasy. You don't want teams to tank in MLB. There you go. But it does only go for one round. That is the nice thing, is that it gets you that top, that shakeup for the top 10, 11 guys, and then it goes back to kind of stock for that and the rest of the draft. Like, it's not like Pittsburgh doesn't have the first pick in every draft. So, anyway, Pittsburgh did do some baseball things.
Well, and that's why they don't need to draft pitching, because they signed stalwarts like Vince Velasquez and Jarlin Garcia, right? So they filled up the stable. Why would they need to draft a pitcher now? That's kind of the rhyme and reasoning. But I like this. Like, Vince Velasquez is a guy that clearly has the arm talent, right? And you know, some control issues here and there, maybe some home run problems at points in his career. But the strikeout numbers have always been very reasonable here. This is a nice pickup for Pittsburgh, who realistically picks up a trade asset for the middle of the season. This is a good deal for a guy like Velasquez. He's going to get to get some innings. Good for Pittsburgh, who needs those innings. Everybody wins. Jarlin Garcia is just such an interesting one. We've had moments where he's been valuable, right? He had some late inning work in San Francisco and then just kind of fell off a little bit there. So could be a really interesting buy low for Pittsburgh. Again, could pick up a trade asset there. So two good moves for where Pittsburgh's at by Sherrington and his team there. In LA, Carlos Estevez was a guy that I think a lot of teams were interested coming out of Colorado. Numbers were good in Colorado. But, you know, obviously anytime you've got a decent arm leaving Colorado, I think everybody's at least listening. What are you feeling with Estevez here?
Yeah, I mean, the ceiling is he, with 1 year in LA, does a Jake McGee out of Colorado when McGee went to San Francisco. And that is establish yourself as you previously were, which is a good relief pitcher. And he's in the right spot because the Angels will have late innings available. It's up to him to early on get himself in a safe hold situation, and then we'll see what happens from there. So Baltimore had a little bit of news a few days ago, but Kyle Gibson's now there for a one-year deal. As a fantasy GM, I'm not looking for Kyle Gibson to join my rosters because of this, and that has a lot more to do with the fact that the AL beast is very difficult and Kyle Gibson might get eaten alive by a few of those lineups. And then your boy, Nomar Mazara, is not, as everyone assumed, going to the Mexican League and or taking a job driving Uber. He's going to be in Baltimore's minor league system blocking. Is that because this is his final contract?
It has to be. I mean, it's now or never, buddy.
What I was just saying, unfortunately, he's going to be blocking some talented minor leaguers, but I understand why Baltimore makes this move. They also, I just really hope they don't Ruggie Odor him and give him more playing time than is deserved.
Well, but you've got a shallow outfield depth right now at the top level in Baltimore. Like, I think this is a good move. They don't have a ton of left-handed bats. So I like the move because if Santander can't be healthy or in a lineup every day, like, you're going to need a left-handed bat in the outfield. So I don't mind this move for Baltimore. I think it's a good pickup. It's a good depth option. It worked for San Diego last year. I think he's going to fill a similar role. But, you know, there's batting average here, right? If we see him in the majors this year, you're not going to get 40 home runs. You're not going to get 100 RBIs. But you could see a 280 batting average, right? We've seen that from Mazara across his career. There is a hit tool there. It's just the power numbers have never really came through. So a guy that's not going to come through. Oh, go ahead, Robbie.
I was just going to say, right at the moment, Cedric Mullins and Gunnar Henderson are sort of the like locked in lefties for that lineup. Mm-hmm. And then there is not a bench lefty possible outside of the previously podcast mentioned Lewin Diaz and then a catcher in Ben Boom. But you don't want to count that in. And then Kyle Stowers, just looking at like a Fangraphs roster resource, they've got him slotted in as the DH. Also quite obvious Stowers could just go back to the minors.
Santander is what, a switch hitter or a lefty? He hits lefty.
Santander, sorry, he's a switch, yeah. But I was sorry, yeah. I just looked quickly at lefties specifically, okay. But you're right, yeah, switch hitter.
Yeah, so like that's the depth piece. I like this as a pickup for Baltimore. The short right porch is always good for any lefty. Playing Yankee Stadium doesn't hurt either, so... You know, at the end of the day, I don't mind this pickup for Baltimore. It adds a depth where they need it. It doesn't mean he's going to be a crack the squad out of camp, hence the minor league deal. But I do think there's a path to playing time here because one thing that we didn't have last year is a clear path for Mountcastle at first. So there's some extra at-bats in the outfield that weren't there for a good chunk of the season last year in Baltimore. So just as another flag for the depth option there. A guy that we won't see this year, David Price, taking the year off, actually, it's a shockingly effective bullpen piece for the Dodgers last season. He had a really reasonable season. For me, this is it. Like he said, he's not pitching in 2023. He's made it kind of clear that he's kind of done. Yeah. And in based on the fact that he can't start as predicted later in his career, when I told everybody that he didn't have the wipeout pitch to stay a starter, magically he became a reliever. This is a guy that obviously had a pretty good career for a long time. Nothing but salute to David Price. Thank you for your time and good luck in whatever's next. I could see him as a player union guy sitting there beside Tony Clark in their gray beards.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, if he's not too busy gaming, you know,
that too. Yep. And then speaking of guys that are going to find themselves on the board of the players union, Jason Hayward signed a minor league deal with the Dodgers as well. Very similar to the Mazara deal. Like this is a depth piece. Yeah. This is basically saying we're not ready to send Andy Pages to the major leagues yet. So we're going to put,
or James Outman. James Outman is another.
He's going to break the roster. Probably he's going to be that sacrificial like roster lamb that makes it out of camp to just fill innings until someone else is ready.
That's my issue with James Outman, and this is not the episode for it, but the Hayward signing to me, I was like, well, he's a minor league deal. So that does mean Outman could go up and come back if when needed. But I need James Outman to be getting like 350 plus at bats this year because he has not disappointed. So what's the point in having him become your quad A guy? Anyway, for a different episode. Different episode.
Yeah, ew. let's get into spending some money. Best place to start is Philadelphia. Made a huge splash signing Trey Turner. It was obvious they were going to sign a shortstop. I'm not going to lie to you. I did not think it was going to be Trey Turner. I mean, it makes a ton of sense with Harper there. The hitting coach from Washington is there. There's a lot of things that, like, when you look at it after the signing, cool, this all lines up, smart, yep, makes sense.
But, well, he spent 6 years with the, or 5 years with the Nationals, so all he's doing is going back to the NL East,
yeah,
and going back with his buddy Bryce, and now they just have even cooler cars.
Well, and he's from North Carolina, right, which was part of the draw to get back home. This is about as close as he's going to get to home down that way. So, I mean, this is a good signing with his buddy, like you said. This is a great signing for Philly. I mean, he's the perfect fit. No arguments at all.
Don't you think this makes Trey Turner even better? Like, he was already in a good Dodger lineup that turned out to not be, like, I mean, obviously they were a great team, but they were not dominant runs all day long without Turner. Turner was like a key cog. Now there are other cogs to help to put bring Turner in. You know, they got Schwarbaum there. There's pieces. I can see Turner's numbers stabilizing at this top three, top five fantasy guy for a few years.
Yeah, I mean, the balance schedule makes it a little bit better, right? Like, if it was to stay slanted to the division, this would be a not great signing, but like the AL or NL East has great pitching, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much top to bottom. So if there was a little bit more of a slant, I would say, but I'm not sure. Like, I'd like to say Trey Turner is as good or better now that he's a Philly, but at the same time, there's something about being a Dodger, right? That makes you, the crowd's different. It's like playing Yankee Stadium. Like, there's always there's home field advantages, and then there's home field advantages. Right, Dodgers, Yankees, Red Sox have a different home field advantage.
The Phillies love you, though. If you're good, the Phillies love. Now, Phillies fans, I should say, Phillies fans love you if you're good.
Yep.
However, if you're not good,
well, like, remember when Harper started there and they were booing him?
Absolutely.
And now they love the guy
last year, right?
Well, exactly. But they realize that both those guys are grinders and they're exactly built for Philly. It just, they're also very fickle, and so it'll be interesting to see what Turner is, because he's not your blue collar baseball player. He's a speed kind of guy. Even though he does grind, like, but it just doesn't, I don't know. I've never had that impression of Trey Turner.
He looks to me like in high school he drove an early 2000s Honda Civic, and he put like the white five spoke rims on it.
I see him more as a Chevy Cavalier guy.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, sure. Similar. Like, a wannabe Fast and Furious is who I think he is. Meanwhile, Harper's pulling up in a truck that's like choking diesel. yeah, that's anyway. Matt Stram, relief pitcher, one time like touted prospect of San Diego, bounced around a bit, signed a 2-year deal with the Phillies. That's just a good depth piece, a lefty arm. I think it's the third lefty arm they've got in the pen now. And Tyon Walker got a 4-year deal with the Phillies. That's fun and exciting.
That deal terrifies me. That might be one of the scariest deals I've seen so far.
I just don't. I mean, there's health concerns and things, but Walker's also a few years away from missing major time. David Dahl signed a minor league. This is exactly the Nomar Mazara thing from last year with the Padres. Dahl signed a minor league deal with the Padres. Please, no fantasy owners pick up David Dahl. Do not do it. It's not worth it. Worst case scenario, some other, you know, chump in your leagues, spend some of his cap space on it. If you're just in a straight up pickup league, wait until he is called up. Wait until he's doing good things at AAA. Don't fall for this again, guys. Such a small pocket of success with David Dahl, and the guy's bones are brittle, and he did not want to come on this podcast once upon a time.
Yeah.
That's what I mean, you get.
Dead to us. And a guy that is dead to everybody in Boston, Xander Bogaerts, signed a massive deal with the Padres. This is an interesting one, very similar to Trey Turner. Did not see this one coming. It'll be really interesting to see what the Padres do with that lineup. They pushed for Turner, offered a huge deal that he turned down. They settled for Bogaerts. And I mean, when you're settling for Bogaerts, that's a nice place to live. Like, Xander Bogaerts is a good ball player. And so it's a lot of money to pay a guy that's 30, going to be 41 at the end of this contract, for a guy that's definitely not a speed guy, but for the most part has stayed very healthy throughout his career. So, you know, there's some
high average, right? Mm-hmm. Like, high average, does not, you know, not a 35 bomb guy. I absolutely could see this going the Eric Hosmer way as it ages, because they're just like, especially if San Diego dips down, you know, as far as like a competitive window goes, because then it's a dead contract. But, like, how crowded does Preller want his middle infield? You know, Bogaerts, Kim, Cronenworth, that Tatis cheater. Like, where are you? And that's before you get to Manny at the corner. There's going to be some crazy movement.
Cronenworth is going to first. That's pretty much a foregone conclusion. So that's been discussed. That's been the plan. It's part of why they wanted Hosmer gone. It's part of why they were looking at a short-term option at the trade deadline. So that's happening. So that that moves either one of Kim or Tatis to second. It's likely to be Kim. Tatis likely to the outfield. I think there's a scenario here where they said to Bogaerts, listen, we're going to sign you. We'll give you no trade clause. But when we tell you to move to third, you say, when would you like me to do that? I don't see you signing an 11-year deal. And I don't see that conversation for a guy like Bogaerts, who's not the best defensive shortstop there is out there. I don't know how you sign 11 years without that being the undertone of what they want to do there. So I think there's a plan there. There has to be. It doesn't make sense. I think they're prepared to let Manny go to free agency here in a couple years. I just think that's the strategy behind this one.
So let me read this off to you because it's fun. So the starting lineup, just listen to how this like tails off. Hassam Kim leads off. Then you got Soto, Machado, Bogaerts, Cronenworth, Nola, Trent Grisham, then DH Luis Camposano, who's also a catching option, which I will argue might make Austin Nola a potential first base backup option to Cronenworth at first base. And then Jose Azokar, guy with 216 plate appearances last year, had an OBP under 300 and 257 average. So league average at best guy there. The bench is the issue at the moment. David Dahl is currently on that bench. Brandon Dixon, Matthew Batten, and Brett Sullivan. And those are infielder, outfielder, catcher / outfield options. None of them under 26. None of them with solid service time. Dahl's got the most at 4 years. The next guy is 1.1 and then like less than half a season and beaten. And Sullivan yet to get in that bat. So they have some like more of those David Dahl type signings to do. And don't forget, Tatis will be back for, you know, May and beyond. But like, it is going to be health dependent. And that's before talking about the rotation, which again, let's do that another episode because it's too deep a dive to do. But
I don't hate it because like they've got Igai Rosario coming. They've got Jackson Merrill, who's not that far away either, right? Like they've got guys coming to back up the lineup depth that they need. Everyone said they cleared the cabinet, and they did. Right, but they still have a couple guys that are in there. I don't mind this. They still have a little bit of work to do to fill out this lineup in depth, but there's lots of guys out there that can fill the needs because you don't have platoon guys. Like you don't have a ton of guys in this group outside of maybe Trent Grisham that you need to have spelled regularly, right? Like Grisham is a split guy, but until Tatis is back is going to be every day, it's center because you need him to play defense. But yeah, I don't hate what they've done here. I like that they only have a couple small pieces to add because I don't have a problem with their rotation right now. I actually kind of like it.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't want to dwell on it too long because I already accidentally did.
You're good. So. Next on the list is a guy that I'm so glad did not sign with Toronto, Andrew Heaney. We already have Yusei Kikuchi. And if you pull up their profiles on Baseball Savant, they're eerily similar. I'm not a huge fan of Heaney. I've never been a huge fan of Heaney. He's had a couple moments in his career where he's been great, and the rest, and I mean the rest, has been a dumpster fire. So yeah. I'm not excited about this for Texas. I'm very excited as a Jays fan that he's not a Jay, but I like what Texas has done. This is not one of those moves that I like.
Well, and from a fantasy perspective, he's been a tough guy to roster because even in points leagues, he struggled to be like a 12-point-per-game guy. Like it is so difficult. I mean, there's a splits guy coming up who I'll cover the next two just because I want to talk. The second one up is the guy I want to talk about, but DeGrom signed with Texas. Obviously 5-year, super risky deal for Texas, super risky for long-term dynasty investments because health, we want him to be healthy because he's so good. Texas is taking a chance and like, that's cool. Like whatever, you know, Texas spending the money, bringing in veteran guys and, they're going to fill out and have a solid club. The next guy up is kind of surprising to me. Cleveland signing Josh Bell to a 2-year deal. Josh Bell was an all-star and then he was not worthy of starting the second half of the year. Well, actually, post trade, he was sub 200 batting average and over 313, 315, something like that was his average when he was with Washington. So he was on a terrible team and raking. And then he went to a team that needed him to produce and his production dried up. So he ended up at Cleveland, who was also a playoff team needing production. And we'll see how it does land with him. Josh Bell has been such an interesting guy from a fantasy perspective too over his career, because he went from like top 100 prospect way back when first base was absolutely pitiful. Josh Bell was one of those like could be a savior for you. And then all of a sudden he fell off a cliff in 18, maybe into 19. And then he's kind of come back a little bit. So he's been up and down, but like wily veteran. It's just depending on your format, you may be able to tolerate Josh Bell when he struggles, or you may need to deal him. So I'm concerned with him going to Cleveland, but there is some offense in Cleveland. And again, they were a playoff team. It's a matter of, is he going to be comfortable there?
Yeah, no, I don't mind that for Cleveland. I like the upside. I think it's a great addition upside wise. I think that it fills a need in Cleveland because they have a couple guys that can slide into first base. Bell can play on the DH side. I think it gives them a lot of flexibility in the roster, which I like. The switch
they platooned. That was the issue, Ty, is that they platooned Naylor and Owen last year. And I think the idea is just give a primary position like that, just like third base to Ramirez, give first base to Bell. And then you can work the other players in and around it. Now Naylor would not be a bad DH for sure, as long as you trust Owen Miller's ability year over year to become a utility type guy. Yeah. And then, of course, you're covered for injury. Like, the team's better for it. I'm just wanting Josh Bell's production to be what it was with a crappy Washington team. Mind you, Soto was with him all year, and the production dropped once they moved. So it's not like you could say, well, he did have Soto. He had him all year. So.
Well, and I mean, you've got Oscar and Gonzalez in right, but Naylor's going to spell him a little bit in right too, I think. So, you know, I think there's some things there. They've got depth in Cleveland. You got to give them that. They've built a nice little tool there because, I mean, they've got guys in the upper minors that are ready to fill that depth as well too, right? They've got four and five guys that are probably major league ready. So going
to
be
not to mention all the shortstop prospects they've got if they want to make deals too, right, Ty? Like they can fill a void if they see that they've got one in season.
Well, and they've got a couple high-end guys that are right on the cusp, right? They've got Rocco, or whatever that guy's
Oh, he's fallen off, though. Yeah, Brayon Rocchio. Yeah, he's fallen off a bit.
But you've also got Tyler Freeman. You've got Aaron Brocco, who's coming to. George Valera, who had a really big run in the middle of last season, and Richie Palacios, who's also there. So, like, there's guys that are going to impact this roster this season in Cleveland's minor league system, to the point, like, they might push some guys off the opening day roster, potentially. I doubt Cleveland, with their roster management strategy, is going to allow that, but certainly going to put writing on the wall, I believe, in that scenario. So getting back to what's going on, we've got, you know, a ton of signings, so this is great. One of my favorite ones is actually Mitch Haniger to San Francisco. It's a great sign.
Really?
This just feels like the signing that was supposed to be with Aaron Judge. And, you know, there's those videos on the internet now of your face on the boat and you're it's like heading to San Francisco with Aaron Judge, and it's got like the sad music kind of thing. It feels like that moment for Mitch Haniger where he was like, bro, I thought.
Oh, right. Right. Yeah. Oh, I guess right? You say, okay. So, right. He was supposed to be the first one. Judge followed. I gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So he's now just there on an island because that team still sucks. They've made very little improvements. Although, you know, I'll flag this one because I still think there's something here. I still think Colton Welker is going to impact that roster this year. I do think we're going to see a couple of their guys that have faded take steps forward. And it's going to be an interesting year because they don't have anybody. Like, they just don't have guys to build around right now in San Francisco. And Mitch Haniger is the closest thing to that they have at the moment.
At the MLB level at the moment, yeah, they don't have cornerstones, but they do have minor league guys who can come up and do some damage for them, but not necessarily this year. I think we're going to see a ton of prospects come up with San Fran this year. I think this is going to be a big show me what you got. Joey Bart is one of those, you know, guys leading the way. You need Joey Bart to be an MLB regular He was a top pick. Like, you can't have a top pick kind of coming up and underachieving. Like, you need him to be a dude. Anyway, different show for that one. Cole Tucker, who I think is the same Cole Tucker that broke in with Pittsburgh, had very brief, like, we're talking weeks of success, and then kind of kicked around. He's just got a minor league deal with Colorado. I figured I didn't mention or didn't write in all the minor league deals, but, you know, a guy going to Colorado with MLB experience, we might see him. And just don't get too overwhelmed if he goes to Triple A and has a really good stat line. It's easy. I think Ronnie hit 312 with Colorado 2 years ago in the minors. So just, you know, you need him to be up in the show. But Cole Tucker could be in your super deep leagues, somebody to take a flyer on. Jameson Taillon, who Ty is not a huge fan of, 4-year deal with the Cubs. I think that's interesting, far more interesting. And congrats to Taillon as well, getting paid 4 years and healthy. Far more interesting is Bellinger getting paid $17 million with how horrible he has been. Ty, is this the Cubs being too smart for their own good, or is this legitimately a good deal? Because it's still 1 year. Like, you don't get anything else with him but this 1 year, and you're paying him so much money.
Yeah, I mean, I think you get a couple things. You get defense, which when we're talking about players fantasy-wise, we always skip that part. Mm-hmm. You have a very good defender in Cody Bellinger who can play center better than anybody that the Cubs have had. So, you know, as they're waiting for that team to turn the corner back into a competitor, adding a defensive guy that's not named Jason Hayward, not the worst idea in the world. They cleared, you know, Hayward's money on the salary cap, right? So obviously they paid him out, but, you know, there's things there that are relevant. But I mean, at the end of the day, when you look at last season, like, and I did this, like, and I haven't done it for the Cubbies, but I did it for the Jays. If you overlay Bellinger's hits and outs in the Rogers Center, he would have had like 16 more home runs than he did in LA. So take that for food for thought. So you have a guy here that had 19 home runs, would have had 35. He had 68, would have had probably 90. Right. So if you say you remove the dead air that you see in Dodgers, like, there's a lot there. Now, is it going to move the 210 batting average or 150 strikeouts? Maybe not. But if you see improvements in those two things and you see the adjustments that I just suggested, the other things, I don't hate this signing. I was for him being a J. I'm for him being an asset because I think there's still enough here. And the final piece to remember is he's been battling a shoulder injury for several years. And I think, you know, there could be a moment here, and whether it's this year or next, where he regains some of his form a little bit. So for me, if I'm the Cubs and I'm trying to rebuild my team, I don't hate this as a risk, because if you have a great experience with him, he loves it in Chicago, you're going to get the first crack at a long-term deal, which to me is worth an extra $8 million over another replacement at that position.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So you've made me think it's fair from an MLB deal. And I guess if things are going good but not great, you could also potentially deal him if you are able to, you know, get that haul, I guess. So let's say that's good. So from a fantasy standpoint then, Ty, on Bellinger, it sounds to me like you're in for this year, but you're in from the flyer standpoint, not the he's back, baby.
Yeah, I'm in on a value play. Like if I get a deal that I'm happy with the value, right, I'm looking at Bellinger in every league that I'm in because I think – there's value to be had, but am I looking for him because I think he's going to change the fortune of my team? No, I just think he's a good value play right now.
Okay. Now the Cubs did do one thing that I thought was like good. They kept not that I don't like the Taillon or Bellinger deal, just like a smart move. In addition, they kept Braylon Marquez, who is a pitcher coming back from injury after injury after injury, and off the 40 man, but they're able to keep him around the organization. This is someone who's owned in your dynasty leagues and someone who had trade value 3 years ago. And I remember, I think I packaged him this year with like some type of legitimate prospect for some kind of SP4-5 guy in a points league where I just like wanted a starter. And now I'm just crossing my fingers that he doesn't burn me too bad on it, but I certainly hope he's able to, to turn it around. So Oakland's got three bits of news. I'll do the non-trade or trader signing one. If Ty, you want to do the other two, and that's James Kaprielian shoulder surgery. But the reports say should be ready for spring training. Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. Kaprielian has had this brief window of health. I'm going to call it 2.5 years, and he has become a major league pitcher. And now he's got this. I'm very afraid that he could end up regressing majorly, and we could lose that ability for him to start and other things. I just hope I'm wrong. But if they're willing to pop in the shoulder, probably cleaning something out, you never know what that's going to do. So I'm scared. Fantasy owners, just really caution. Don't circle him in or, assume he's going to be one of your guys this year.
Yep. Two free agents, absolute nobodies, which is the rest of the Oakland roster. Jace Peterson, who has been a fringe backup for several years, non-impact guy, 2 years in Oakland. It's a depth piece at best. We're not interested unless you're out of position players. So that one's an easy one. Chad Smith is a little bit more interesting as a relief arm only. I don't see how a zero track record in the minor leagues for starting is ever going to transition him into a starter's role. He had a rough go in limited innings last year in Colorado, 15 games, 18 innings, decent strikeout numbers, 23 in 18 innings, but an ERA of 7.5. FIP, which is always interesting when you're talking about Colorado guys, is 4.8. So there's some improvement there that we can expect. And like I said, the strikeout per nine number is the one that is for me interesting by leaving Colorado. And this does fit the kind of guy that Oakland tends to chase to be able to turn into some value. So I'm at least watching Chad Smith. I'm not overly interested because he's a reliever, but at the same time, there's at least a radar for me as to keep an eye on this one.
Yeah, that's fair. Aledmys Diaz also signed a 2-year deal to be the starting shortstop, I guess, with Oakland. He's a one-time All-Star, baby. And then he went from the Cardinals to the Jays to the Astros, where he got a couple rings. And now it's like $14 million. So he's starting. Yep. He's starting. So, and then Ty, you're up because you already pronounced his name correctly once.
Well, I just think Aledmys Diaz is the new Jed Lowry. I think that's the way we should refer to him as from now on. Red Sox made a splash by letting Bogarts leave and then countered it by bringing in Masataka Yoshida, 5-year deal. Something about Boston that just screams bring in the overseas players. I don't know what it is about the Asian players that they're drawn to the racism that is Boston, but they certainly have drawn the Asian players over several years now. And I'm interested by this one. I don't know enough about Yoshida to really put a dent into how good he's going to be. I haven't done the Ha-Sun Kim, you can't hit analysis yet. So I will get there on this one and regroup on it, but I'm interested by the signing because it, you said it in our conversation offline. Boston's at least trying to retool, but I don't know. I feel like this is sorry guys, we let our good players go. Here's at least a guy that is marketable that can give us some at bats. How do you feel about this?
The success. This is funny for me. The success rate of players who've come over from KBO, it's just proven to not be sustainable throughout a season. You can't say, Yoshida's going to be able to break the mold and, be a 300 hitter. He's not going to be a power guy. But Boston has the ability to make things happen at different times. You basically think they're going to suck and they win the AL East. Yeah. So I'm terrified by this signing. Because I just keep thinking, well, they're not regressing if they're doing this. So what are they doing? And is Yoshida going to be a 70-70 guy with 15 dingers? Or is he going to be an 85-85 guy and they're going to have a ton of run production? He's going to push 20. What are we? And I'm just assuming a 280 average is kind of what we're going to see if he hits. Now, we've also seen absolute disasters, but not not for guys who have come over that you think are going to start. Now, Ha-Seong Kim was a guy who just got a 5-year, $25 million deal. This is not the same deal. Like, this is this is one of those big old deals, like Dice K, like, which is not good to say to Red Sox fans, that I want to just see play out. But I don't think from a fantasy standpoint, I'm going to dip my toe in this one. I think I'm just going to observe and hope he's not, you know, a 320 guy.
The only thing I'll say is that with the cost of pitching, I think most Red Sox fans would look positively on the Dice K contract at this point.
if they could get it back.
Right. So speaking of big contracts, Aaron Judge obviously signed for $1 billion with the Yankees. This was always a foregone conclusion. Like, for me, I was saying this to my brother just today, actually, how ridiculous the Giants contract leak was. Like, that was clearly player side leak to get the Yankees to get off of their pocketbook. He was never leaving.
Get the numbers right. Get the years right. Just
you
let's
don't
get
leave
it
done. Exactly. You don't leave $40 million on the table if you had any intention of taking those other offers seriously, right? So he had $400 million on the table from the Padres, and he said, "Nope, I'm going to take $360 million." But what an epic screw up by the Yankees! Like, they could have saved $80 million had they just done this the beginning of the season. And good for Aaron Judge for absolutely sticking it to them. As a fan of a team in their division, knowing they've just dumped all their money into like three players, you love to see it. And I'm here for it. But, you know, for me, it would have been wrong for Aaron Judge not to be a Yankee. I will say that.
Yeah. Although, going to San Fran or somewhere else just wouldn't have been right.
I mean, if there was another spot for the 6'9" guy to be, being a Giant would have been the right fit. But you know, like, but Yankee Stadium is where he belongs. I think we can all agree on that.
Yes. Also going to Yankee Stadium, Tommy Canley, who I was there before, 2-year deal for him. Milwaukee, Adonis Medea got an MILB deal. Just thought I'd note that there was a trade. Winter meetings gave us a trade. Atlanta, Detroit made one. Atlanta gets likely back end rotation, or sorry, back end of the bullpen guy, depending on how he's pitching this year. Joe Jimenez, and Detroit gets Justin Henry Molloy as a prospect and Jacob Higginbotham. There you go. And then Miami also picked up an outfielder from the Mets that ended or whatever completed the Eliza Hernandez deal. They've got Jake Maggum. And this is somebody who I did not know about, but this is what happens with AAA dudes or guys who kind of go up slowly. I forget what his draft year was. It was 16, 17, something like that. Anyway, he's got like a 280 something career minor league average. Last year, he got up to 33 games in AAA and hit 333 with a 365 OBP, and a 471 slug. So what I'm saying is that crowded Miami outfield that thinned itself last year through many poor performances added another piece to the pile.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, if you going the Cincinnati route, whereas if you don't have any good players, get a bunch of crappy ones and put them together. Just
as many as you can and see what sticks. Yeah. Throwing spaghetti at the wall.
Yeah. It's funny. I've seen a bunch of Mets fans moaning and groaning about their rotation that, you know, and it's one of those ones, like, if this is it, it's not enough, but they brought in Verlander. They brought in Jose Quintana. They already had Scherzer. You know, people forget McGill, right? I think people have just forgotten that McGill is good. And I think that's one that, as we get into the season and McGill's rolling out as SP4, I think people are going to have a bit of a different opinion on that one. So I'm interested to kind of see that play out. But what are your thoughts on what they've done with the rotation to start? And you know, is it enough in your mind?
Well, I mean, you're saying McGill, they've also got, you know, I'm going to call him a crafty lefty. He was only drafted in 2017, but David Peterson, plus they've got Carlos Carrasco coming back for another year. So they've got depth. They also added David Robertson and via trade Brooks Raley, people from Tampa Bay. And I want to talk about that one with Keyshawn Askew going to the Rays. Holy Anna, I was on Askew last year. We'll talk about it another day, but I think the Mets are super solid, but they're like the Padres with their offense. They also signed Brandon Nimmo. That is hot news that he's inked in for 8 more years, but they've got Nimmo, Marte, Lindor, Alonso, McNeil, Mark Hanna, Vogelbeest, Eduardo Escobar, and then catcher. And I'm going to put a question mark for McCann or Thomas Nido. We'll see what actually happens there long term. But their bench super sucks. Luis Gilmore, Darren Ruff, and then potentially Kalal Lee. I'd love if Kalal Lee was there. And I would super love if they just made him a 50 stolen base guy and gave him like 150 at bats on top of that. That'd be great. But I don't know that they're going to do that because he was like a dynamite base stealer in the lower minors. And he still has the ability, but he's no longer like doing it as much, like stealing as much. Yep. But back to the rotation, which was your question. I love this.
And one guy that I'll also throw in that no one's thinking about is Joey Lucchesi, who's a guy that could impact this rotation and could be the fifth guy, like very easily. Like he was out for most of last year. I don't know if he actually rehabbed at all last year, but
Elizer Hernandez could also be that. Like maybe. Elizer Hernandez, he's new to the team, but the possibility exists that he could be a starting pitcher. I'm not saying he's dominant. I'm just simply stating an MLB veteran type guy, you could have one there.
I actually think Elizer could be a really good bullpen piece, right? Like like he could be.
They obviously acquired him for a specific purpose, right? Like this,
correct?
You know, this wasn't a filler. Like they know what they're doing with him, and I'm excited to find out because hopefully he can be a fantasy relevant guy.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I think there's enough here for them to go into the season, right? And you know, everybody's they don't have a fifth guy. Well, I disagree. They've got four of them, right? So right? Like I think there's an opportunity for them to just roll with it. They've got depth issues. But I think some of that is addressed by bringing Nimmo back officially. That pretty much sets their outfield between Canna, Marte, and Nimmo. But keep in mind, like they've got some depth in the upper minors. Like they don't got a lot, but what they do have is very good, right? They've got Francisco Alvarez, who we're probably going to see behind the dish early this year, if not out of camp. We're probably going to see Brett Batty, who got a lot of time last year, is a guy that they're going to expect to step in. And really, like when you look at it, like, you know, are we really going to see Eduardo Escobar keep him off of the field, right? Because once you do that, then you have Escobar to spell off McNeil at second. McNeil could spell off in the outfield, right? So now all of a sudden your roster construction's getting better, right? And then you add Ronnie Mauricio, who's a guy who we could see again this year as well, into that mix. He played a lot at AAA last year, has, you know, enough defense and speed to be relevant. He still could be a guy that's traded as well. But either way, you've got depth here that's going to impact the Major League roster. And so for me, I'm not that concerned with what they've got. I would like them to add one more power bat. That's, I think, the thing that this lineup is missing. Obviously, you have the right-handed power. You could theoretically roll him with Vogelbeest, but as we've seen from every other team he's ever played on, his time has already worn out with the Mets. So, you know, the reality is he's probably done for. So I don't know. Interesting. But stability. Head into St. Louis. There is no better picture of stability in Major League Baseball than the St. Louis Cardinals. We've got Wilson Contreras replacing The Rock, Yadier Molina. This is a great signing for me. You know, you've got a guy that is worth more than what they're paying them. Like this is a good deal for the Cardinals to get a guy like Contreras to replace a guy like Molina. This is probably better than giving up the assets they would have had to trade for a catcher. I think this makes them a better team. How are you feeling about this one, Robbie?
I'm just trying to look to see how many leagues I own Jose Herrera in, who was like the next guy up in St. Louis, so I can Jose Herrera, I believe, is a Diamondback. So I can trade Yvonne Herrera because he is now tostado in St. Louis, and that sucks. And also Andrew Kinsler.
Yeah.
He is the other guy who loses out in this. So it's unfortunate, but this is what happens when you're a team like St. Louis who consistently wants to compete and you just lost a franchise guy in Molina. So he's there. Good for Wilson Contreras. I honestly am going to be taking a deep look into this guy to see if we can get the bounce backs we've seen from Goldie and the stability out of Arenado. And can Contreras get back to that? Because if that's the case, your dynasty team would look a lot like the Cardinals lineup.
Well, I actually don't think this kills Ivan Herrera as much as you think he does. Like, the one knock on Contreras is not his offense. It's actually his glove work. So I think I think there's a scenario here where Ivan Herrera is still the guy behind the dish and Contreras is there to spell and DH, right? Like, I really believe that, because in place in first base, because, you know, Goldie's a gold glover over there, but, you know, at some point too, you're going to want to spell his time to keep him ready for the end of the year. So I think there's some at bats to go around here. And when you're used to having Yadi run out there every single day for 20 years, you know, there's going to be some adjustments, and it's not going to be you tap Contreras on the shoulder every day. So whether Herrera's there out of camp or early in the year or a little bit later, we'll see. But I wouldn't put that one to bed yet.
Okay. I appreciate that. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not going to say I want to see what happens in spring training, because that's not a thing. But I do want to see what it looks like they're going to do with him, because I don't want to have a prospect who I picked up early and waited on, especially when he was, I think, 19 in the AFL, and then we still haven't seen him 3 years later. I don't want to give up on
catchers,
that.
Catchers.
Yeah, for sure, catchers. But at the same time, when I, as a dynasty GM, try to roster as few as possible, and he's one of the guys who I've stuck with, to know that all of a sudden it appears as though he's blocked. Although I do like what you said about Contreras moving, you know, DH first base, because that's true. That's what was happening with him. That's what could be happening with him. I just want to see it for myself. But another guy the St. Louis signed, and when I'm looking at his baseball reference photo, he's wearing a Great Lakes Loon hat, which I also have a Great Lakes Loon hat. It's like we're twins or something. Guillermo Zunga. Zunga from Colombia.
It's Guillermo.
Guillermo, that's what I think I said. So he signed an MLB deal, and this is a 23-year-old pitcher who last year in double, I don't get any of this, in double A, 4-4, 4.77 ERA in 54 and two-thirds innings. He had 66 Ks, a whip issue, a walk issue. I don't understand. He obviously has options, but he's on the 40 man. So St. Louis must know there's a thing with him, and we'll have to find out. It's just interesting when a guy gets an MLB deal. We saw someone with the Mets, I forget who it was, that was a former Ray who got one, and I was like, I'm very interested in this. Nothing came of it. Zuniga could be the next guy that I'm interested in, but I'm not going to get too crazy for it.
Big arms, strikeout numbers are what you're chasing there. That's what.
Yeah, for sure. But it's just like, we've already seen Alex Reyes not get managed properly by the Cardinals. Can we expect this guy? I don't know. Seattle DePoto, you know, he's been busy working underground, not doing too much, but did get another RP, Casey Stadler. It does make me smile every time I hear that. I forgot about that too. Anyway, he just picked up Casey Stadler. So depth piece. If you've got five RPs and you're in a points league, maybe you try to get him cheap. Anyway, but a big time signing. Red Sox signed Kenley Jansen for 2 years. Confuses the heck out of me, along with Martin, who we talked about on the previous one. They're not giving up on the bullpen. They signed a veteran or whatever, a guy coming over from Asia for the outfield. More confusion with the Red Sox, but anyway, let's end. We got three left. Let's end on positive notes. I know you should like the next one.
Yeah, I mean, Kershaw sticking around in LA. There was always the hang up the cleats conversation. This is obviously
or the Texas conversation.
Yeah, good news for Dodger fans. I actually don't even know the term on this one. Do you know the term on this one, Robbie?
No, and I honestly don't care. I was like, okay, good. He's got three more years with the Dodgers. I hope there are no opt-outs. Just finish as a Dodger.
See, I don't think it's a three-year deal. That's why I was asking. I think it's a one-year deal.
Oh, so you think there's opt-outs.
Think it's 1 year for 20 mil is what I have seen. So I'm not. The deal includes...
I saw a three.
I'm not seeing 3 years anywhere.
Okay. Also, while we could stay on Kershaw, but I'll very quickly just slip into, since Shu Chu is not coming back, there were some potential rumors he re-signed in the KBO. He gone. And then it's old news by now, by the time you're listening to this, but Mike Clevenger is now White Sox. We are 100% hoping to see a return to glory for Clevinger for those who care at all. So did you get a Kershaw confirmation?
One year, 20 confirmed.
So what is it? Options on 2 and 3?
Nope. I just think it's 1 year.
What? I don't know why I wrote that. Okay. So from all this talk, Ty, now that that's the hot news segment, that was 45 minutes long, but my gosh, there's a lot happening right now. Do you think, and so this is the question for the fantasy baseball commissioners out there. If you're in a contract league and you are seeing these 11-year deals, these 8-year deals, these 9-year deals, do you think contract leagues need to extend from the typical 5-year max to 6, 7, 8 No. or more?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
And the reason for that is you don't have enough turnover, right? Like we're in some of our home leagues are keep forever. There's some good elements of keep forever, right? But in a keep forever, you have to limit the number of keepers. Now, if you look at the deeper dynasty format, to have keep forever is dangerous. It creates legitimate lopsided leagues, and it makes it hard to maintain owners. So from that perspective, like keep forever, you have to be very committed to the group of people in your league in order for that to be a successful model. So for me, I'm not for that. And especially when it comes to spending large sums of money to play in these leagues, to be in a scenario where you have to rebuild or you take over a team or you have devastating injuries or heaven forbid people die on your team, you end up with holes that take a decade to recover from because you've made the contracts too long. So it's an auto quit league scenario if you go with too long of contracts, and that's a bad way to set up a league in my opinion.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I understand because even 5-year contracts, and this was a name that I came across when I was writing about Kansas City, and I was like, what is the name of the player that like was a flash in the pan guy, had like, you know, 2 years of success with the Blue Jays? You know who it was? Devin Travis. Devin Travis is the type of player in fantasy, and if you know the player I'm talking about, he had pockets of success and then devastating career-ending injuries. Mm-hmm. Devin Travis would have gotten massive, like the longest contract you could have given to a player because you liked his power and average ability, and he just looked like a good player. So if you're in a fantasy league where like all of a sudden your commissioners or commissioner, whatever, decides instead of, if it's not a keep forever, which means there's no contracts, you just have the player. If you do contracts and if you do salaries and contracts, Devin Travis would have got a really long deal, and whoever signed him either traded him away or is not in that league anymore. Because to your point, Ty, when you get people who have the ability to sign for more years, you end up with more poor contracts in fantasy. Not that you don't get them in MLB as well, but those players typically stick around. But if you are an aggressive fantasy guy and in a contract league, you go crazy a year or two in auction, 3-4 years down the road, your team could be absolute garbage and you can't trade anyone. And then you're locked. And what ends up happening? Well, those guys quit or they just don't care anymore. And those are like almost the worst owners, the ones who pay and but don't do anything with their team. And then everyone, like especially if you play heavy divisions, they just get the crap beat out of them year in and year out. And all they're doing is donating to the pot, really. So I agree, like max 5 years if you do that kind of thing. But I'm curious if anyone out there, hit us up at Dingers Pod if you have an opinion on contract leagues extending. Obviously not keep forever dynasty, so you don't have contracts in those leagues. So if you have an argument, I'd love to hear it because I'm interested in both sides. But Ty, originally an hour and 4 minutes ago, we thought this topic tonight was the Rule 5 draft. Now it was arguably kind of a stinker, but again, we'll see at the end of the day how many useful MLBers come of this. There were some taken, more in the minor league draft, which we can skim over, but we had some good ones. The Nationals, unlike the lottery, the Nationals did get to pick first in this one, and they picked Thad Ward from Boston. Always good to see prospects leaving the AL East, even though I've officially now signed on with the Mariners. The number 13 prospect for the Nationals now is Thad Ward. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, I like this pick because, like, Washington doesn't have any depth, so, like, they might actually be able to run Thad out for a good chunk of the season and retain him, and that's really the goal here with the Rule 5 draft. And we haven't seen a lot of this in recent years, like, we've seen some aggressive picks. We've seen people trying to cheat the system, and there was a good cheat the system this year that we'll get to eventually here. But, you know, I like this as a guy that can actually be on the major league roster, probably one of, if not the guy most likely to stick out of this draft. And it's partly because Washington stinks. They don't have any pitching depth, and this gives them some options. So I actually like the second pick the most, Robbie. Like, it's probably my favorite pick in it, and it would be my second one. So I'll let you jump on Thad if you want to go there.
Yeah, I just wanted to finish a quick point on Thad. To your point, he'll just get buried in the bullpen because that's what he is. He's a bullpen guy. 13 starts this year, but only 51 and a third innings from those 13 starts. So he's just going to end up in the Nationals bullpen. 66 Ks in the 51 and a third innings. Not ideal when he got higher, but he did go through four levels last year, finishing at double A. But I'm looking at the batting average against. In 33 and a third innings at double a 230 batting average, a 1.26 whip. He's able to handle himself 41 Ks in 33 and a third innings. So I think that's somebody who's going to be okay. But as the 1-1, we've seen other guys recent years. Ronnie Garcia with Detroit was one that comes to mind for me, who they were like, this is going to be a starter long term. He's a project. Like, Thad Ward will be a project, but he's also 25, I believe. 25-year-old, 6'3", righty, 190 pounds. Came up through the Red Sox system, and funny enough, as a child, was a bat boy for the Red Sox in spring training. Right. So that's all you needed to know. That's more than you needed to know on Thad Ward. And I just found that pick to be solid because I just think to myself, well, he'll just stick, right? So if you want an RP that may or may not be of any use, Thad Ward will be the guy at 1-1. But Ryan Noda, former Blue Jay, former Dodger, now an A. What do you say?
Well, I mean, you just have some good numbers here. Like, the minor league career, the power numbers are there, 894 OPS, 94 career home runs at the minor league level. But most importantly, 29 and 25 in the last two seasons, just reaching the upper minors. And in a reasonable OBP clip, 383 and 396 across those same two seasons. So there's a guy here that fits Oakland's profile of get on base. There's a guy here that has a path to playing time in Oakland, right? There's really nobody stopping him from playing first base. Hits left-handed. He could be what we wanted Seth Brown to be going into last season. I think he's going to be in competition, if not, you know, be handed the first base job in Oakland. Like, I like this as a really sneaky guy to do some damage for really cheap in a lot of your leagues. So I like this one. If I'm not saying Thad Ward's the most likely to stick, it's definitely Ryan Noda for me, because the stuff's there. He's in the wasteland that is Oakland, and I like what could happen here. So I think making him Oakland's 26th prospect is just short-sighted. I think he's much better than that. I think there's an underrated.
Well, that's MLB. Here. That's just MLB.com being silly.
Yeah, I'm
like
just saying
James better Edwin with the there. Dodgers. James Edwin with the Dodgers is in the teens for the Dodgers. Hold on, Alexander Canario, who just update for any dynasty guys out there, Canario, who was like a thumper, MLB bound for 2022 with the Cubs, had 30 plus dingers last year. He got hurt in the winter league and has had two surgeries this offseason, one shoulder and I believe one ankle related from this injury. I don't know what happened. It was in game, and I think he got hit by a truck. one must have came on the field.
Must have been on the Michael Sanders sprinkler.
Saunders, say his name right. Saunders, Michael Saunders. But that was Stroman that fell in the sprinkler. Anyway.
No, it was Saunders. 100%.
No, it was Stroman that Roto Ronnie.
I will die on this hill. It's Michael
you
Saunders.
Tell us, Saunders did not go down to a sprinkler. He went down to a strong breeze from right field. Jose Hernandez was the third guy picked, and he's hard to find on Baseball Reference because he's buried, because there's a lot of Hernandezes that show up. But he is wearing a Great Lakes Loon hat. Fun fact. That's what happens when you're in the Dodgers system.
Toronto and Blue Jays left fielder Michael Saunders stepped on a sprinkler while shagging fly balls Wednesday to tearing cartilage in his left knee. Dead on the hill.
My apologies. Thank you for immediately correcting my error. Yeah. Oh, anywho. So rule five pick. Where did Hernandez go? He was third.
He went to Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Went to Pittsburgh. So what did he pitch last year? AA. He had 59 and two-thirds innings, 69 Ks, a 1.2 whip, and eight saves. So this is a late inning save hold guy if you want to try to get cheeky with it. But Nick Birdie, who we'll mention later, was also a guy once upon a time that the Pirates picked, and injury prevented him from doing serious damage. So yep. The Reds were able to pick Blake Sabol from Pittsburgh. I don't have any notes on him. Is he?
Yeah. So this is an interesting one. I don't know who to give credit to, because somebody tagged this on Twitter and I did a little digging on this one, but really productive season last year, 284, 859 OPS, had 19 home runs, 75 RBIs in the Pittsburgh system, across over 500 at bats. So there's a guy that could really easily fit here. Still just 24, seventh round pick by the Pirates in 19 out of Southern Cal. So, you know, there's enough here, to make it. I believe this is San Francisco, right? No, sorry. Reds drafted him. He got traded to San Francisco though. So he is on their depth chart, as a starter right now. And I believe
he's with the Giants.
Yeah. He got traded after this pick. So there was some cash exchanging hands. So it's all good. Nope. And I wouldn't have known that if I didn't see whoever I'm unable to give credit to. But this is one that was exposed. The comment was, you know, Pittsburgh trying desperately to fill outfield positions, and then they let a guy that has very productive numbers that could fill that spot go. And I mean, it's a little short-sighted statement, because at the end of the day, Pittsburgh's system is pretty stacked and they've got lots of outfielders in it. So I'm sure they had to make some tough choices. This was one of them. But I think there's a guy here that legitimately could go into San Francisco and take some at-bats this year.
This guy replaces Aaron Judge.
100%.
Straight up. Yeah.
Okay. And he's from California, and he didn't spurn the team, unlike Judge. So
jerseys are sold. Yeah, they're printing them right now. Mason Englert has become a Detroit Tiger. And he did that through theft in Texas, which I believe you can be killed for. So he's going to get banished to the pen, but he was a starter last year, 24 starts at high A and double A, finished the year at double A, 118 two-thirds innings, 136 Ks, a whip. I like this one. 0.99. He's the great one, everybody. So we'll see what happens with the Detroit pen. I mean, much like, you know, Detroit overall, huge disappointment 2022. We'll have to see what they can come back with in 2023. So they're a Rockies picked up a relief pitcher, Kevin Kelly. We don't need to dive into him. Two reasons. One, Cleveland wasn't protecting him. Two, he went to Colorado.
K numbers are good though, right? So the upside's there.
That's the only thing I assumed would be good.
Yeah. Yeah. There's it's clearly a bullpen arm. The K per nine was above 11 out of the bullpen. It's decent. Numbers last year were strong with a 204, right? So enough to.
Do you happen to have his pitches? Like, I'm just curious what he throws. Does he have a slider?
I didn't get that far because he's a relief pitcher in Colorado.
Yeah.
He doesn't deserve.
Curious. Reason being, Ty, if he's got a good out pitch, he could maybe continue it in Colorado. If he's relying on the fastball, he'll probably be protected for a lot of the season.
There's not enough good data on the minor league guys yet. I'm looking forward to the day that Baseball Savant expands the minor league data. That will be absolute dynamite when that happens. But we're not there yet. So we don't have all of that. But next on the list, Kevin Kelly, also real good numbers. Sorry, Kevin Kelly's who we were talking about, right?
Yeah, Nick Enright, who I've got numbers on too.
Okay, so Kevin Kelly was the guy who we were talking about, or at least I was, so I apologize if I screwed that one up. But headed to Colorado, he's useless, but we don't have that numbers. Nick Enright is the next guy on the list going to the Marlins. He becomes their 24th prospect, which is, you know, potable. But what do you got here? Who's this guy, and do we like him?
Yes, I like him, and here's why. Legitimate bullpen arm in 2021. He was closing in 2022. He was closing. Now, regularly. I don't know. He had 5 saves and 11. Tells me that he's not starting, right? He's had 1 start in 4 years as a pro. So this guy is out there to get outs. 48 games last year. He had 65 and 2/3 innings, 87 Ks. So this is another thing. We don't try to go too hard onto like advanced stats, things like that. But here's one that I do like. The hitter average against him last year in AA and AAA, so you're seeing better hitters, 203, a combined 203. So I like that. I also like the fact that he's going to a team that I think is going to suck, even though I don't want them to, in the Marlins. And cool beans for him, you know? That's that. This could be someone that sticks. Again, a lot of these guys get returned before anything ever happens with them. Spring training, they're back, or they're traded. You know, Jordan Romano, to keep everyone in mind, Jordan Romano was never a starter in the minors, never a good one for sure. Got kicked around. It was Rule 5, drafted by one team, traded Texas, something, got sent back to Toronto. Now look at him. I'm not saying Enright's the next guy, but there's the possibility exists when they're a legit closer with the ability to finish games that a team like the Marlins might want to keep him around. So yeah, lots of teams in between: Angels, D-backs, Cubs, Twins, Red Sox, passed or had full rosters. And then the White Sox picked Nick Avila. I'm not sure if this is anything to do with the Avila of Detroit, or formerly, I guess, of Detroit or not. But yeah, it's the classic right-handed pitcher. And then the Orioles took Andrew Pollotti from Boston. The Brewers took RHB, Gus Varland. And then this was the one that I thought was very
real, real quick. Gus Varland has some really good pre-pandemic numbers. So okay. I don't know if it's enough to, because his post-pandemic numbers are absolute garbage. But there's enough here for Varland to take a shot on. Obviously, the Brewers feel that way. And just an interesting guy. I got lost in the rabbit hole while you were talking about whether Avila had relatives.
Okay, no, that's fine. We know he's got relatives. but anyway, Noah Song is the most interesting pick to me, and that's a 20 by the Phillies. And interesting because he hasn't had a pro inning pitch since 2019. He did start. Yeah, he started, and then he had his commitment to the Navy. I don't know what happened with that.
I believe what I read is he's still in the Navy, which makes it a really good sneaky pick, because now he can sit on the roster. He's going to be able to stay a Philly. This is cheating in the most like hat tip kind of way. Now there's some probably pro military, pro Navy people out there that are like, this is garbage. You have to respect it. But from a GM savagery, this is a great move. In my opinion, because there's an upside here. And when it comes to the Rule 5, especially the second half of the draft of the Rule 5, like, you're not always getting a guy that's going to be major league ready, or he would have been picked. So this gives you an angle to acquire talent without having to really do any damage.
Yeah, I think he was a second round pick, and they said the one of the major issues was the fact that he had a commitment, and then he honored the commitment, which was supposed to be 2 years, and maybe through the pandemic it's been extended, or he chose to extend it. We will see. But I mean, again, it's $100,000 that the Phillies pay, and out of this they could end up with Noah Song if he's available, and they might be able to do, like, you know, send him to the complex and do this and do that to like extend the time. But as long as he's, I think it has to be active roster time. I don't know if it counts if you're off serving, but serving or doing something, there might be, like you said, Ty, a technicality that makes this happen. But anyway, Padres picked a lefty reliever, Jose Lopez from Tampa Bay, who will, according to MLB.com, become their 22nd best prospect. The Mariners, Jerry made a pick. Of course he did. Chris Clark from the Cubs, a right-handed pitcher. We'll dive into him in a future episode. And then the Cardinals had the second to last pick in Wilkin Rodriguez from the Yankees. And then the Mets did the thing where they take a player from the Yankees as well, which I appreciate. And they took Zach Green, who was higher rated through MLB.com. And I'm only saying that because I just referenced MLB.com for this draft. So,
yeah.
But then there's a massive minor league phase, and I'll just quickly read what it is so that people understand the idea. Minor league draft of the Rule 5, the cost rising from $12,000 to $24,000 if the player's in AAA and they weren't protected. I think it's $12,000 if they were in AA. If they were previously in AA, but that phase has been eliminated, which is why there's a pay range that the teams get. Now, every team took players in this. Like, a lot of players were taken. We're just going to discuss any that we think are worth mentioning here. So who's the first one in order here? The first overall player taken was by the A's. They took Jovis del Rosario from Pittsburgh. I honestly don't have anything on him. Kyle Glogowski went to the Reds. That's a right-handed pitcher. He was with the Phillies. That's somebody that I have heard before, made notes on, but nothing massive. Who was the first really interesting guy? The Padres took third baseman Evan Mendoza from St. Louis. That's somebody who's kind of on the cusp we could see next year.
Yeah, I think the big ones, Josh Palacios to the top of the second round, is a guy that's had some major league time from Toronto, went to Washington last season, and is now a Pirate, where Sherrington, former whatever he was, assistant GM in Toronto, is now the GM there in Pittsburgh. So familiar with Palacios. Palacios can hit. Like, there's a guy here. He just hasn't had the right run or the proper spring training opportunity. Pittsburgh might offer that for him this year. Being a left-handed bat, there could be a guy that could get some play there.
Yeah, I've got two here, Ty, in outfielder Jared Olivia, who's leaving Pittsburgh, going to the Angels against AAA. But that's a guy who had some prospect pedigree once upon a time. And then interesting story here, Nick Birdie, former Pirate as well, also went to San Diego. Birdie was a Rule 5 pick, MLB Rule 5 pick. Then was, I think, 8 1/3 innings in to his 2019 season with Pittsburgh. I think he'd had a save, maybe two. Also got blown up in one, but then got hurt. Tommy John surgery, was sent back, cut, whatever happened, ended up in San Diego, recovered with their minor league system, had a setback, ended up somehow becoming eligible for this minor league draft. Well, the Cubs have picked him up. So he's already got, I think, at least one major league close in him, and the ability to keep the ball out of the playing field by striking guys out. Now he's with the Cubs. They're dart throws here. But that one's, to me, is a little interesting. Ty, you have somebody that Jerry picked up.
Yeah, Jerry took Logan Warmoth from the Jays system. Former first-round pick, which, without going through the whole list, I got to imagine there's only going to be a handful of those mixed in here. Warmoth was kind of a stretch pick when they took him out of Mississippi State and never really reached any potential or upside in the J system at any point in time. This isn't really a big one. Just the fact that he's a first round is notable. The only other guy for me that I had further down was Pete Solomon, a pitcher. I believe he's a fifth rounder out of some school I've never heard of before. Was in the Houston system, got buried, and for obvious reasons, isn't going to crack that rotation because it's just good. He bounced around last year, ended up in Pittsburgh, and now he's in Arizona. This is a guy that I think could have some major league impact this year. He's obviously been drafted in the minor league Rule 5, but this is a guy with, the lack of starting pitching depth that Arizona has, very easily could find himself into some games and some innings this season.
Yeah, and I've got next up here is Josh Stowers, who it appears was a second-round pick in 2018 from Louisville, so college bat, and he was picked up in this draft. I'll have to reference back after because I got the stat line in front of me now. But he played AA for Texas the last 2 years, and last year he had 22 stolen bases, which leads the way for him, and 10 dingers. The year before, Ty, he had 20 home runs and 21 stolen bases. Never been a big batting average guy. Once he hit AA, he was in and around the 220 mark. OBP's just a bit over 300. 331 last year was that a career high? No, that's just a high at AA. He did have fall league time pre-COVID, not much, 61 at bats, not much to come of it, 131. So did not go well. OPS just over 700. So I'm a little interested. I feel like he was the Yankee, one of the Yankees that came over in the Joey Gallo trade, which is why I'm mentioning him now. So there was some investment made in him. And if you don't have any other players, I just want to talk about the fact that the Phillies took 7 players overall. That's just interesting. Yep. The final 3 being Trey Cobb, pitcher from the Mets, catcher Cody Roberts with Baltimore, and infielder Oliver Dunn from the Yankees. That's just a lot of depth to take.
Yeah, well, I mean, here's the thing. Like, the Phillies have nobody. They have nobody in their system, right? They've got a couple good upside guys, but no depth, right?
Yeah, they are the bad boys of baseball. Who do they have in the system? Nobody.
Yeah,
it's more of a GTA reference, I guess, than
else. Yeah, no one else is gonna know that one. But yeah, there's lots happening there. Rule 5, always exciting, and something that we get to brag about later because we cover it and no one else does. So really, really great thing to end up on. Let us know what you thought. If there's anybody that you feel we missed on or we should have touched a little bit more, but I think that's a great spot to leave it, Robbie, as we head into a little bit of the soft spot of the offseason here. We're still hopeful to see a couple more pieces on the hot stove before we hit the holiday season. But until next time, it's been Robbie and Tyler here on Dingers.